Welcome to Season 10 of Digital Learning Radio. I'm Catherine, and I'm joined by my co-host, Laura.
Hi.
In this season of the podcast, we're sharing what is inspiring us on our ongoing story of learning. This week, it's Laura's for sharing, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about what's been inspiring her to learn this week.
Yep, and it's a good one this week. But first, I want to check in with you. So let's think back to last week's conversation where you shared some ideas from the book Stop Talking, Start Influencing. I know you were really thinking about the concept of priming and a few other takeaways. So how's it going? Have you been able to continue thinking or maybe implement any other ideas from the book yet?
Yes. And I'm a little obsessed with this idea of priming. And I had a chance to dig into this whole idea a little bit more. And a few quotes appeared on Readwise that helped.
Of course.
Yes. So it's been a fun week for elevating my priming ideas. So the big distinction is that in The Art of Gathering, Priya talked about priming prior to the event. And in Stop Talking, Start Influencing, what the author said is to think more about the first moments before the gathering or learning experience occurs, because what happens right at the beginning can influence the rest of the session. So one of his burning questions at the end of the chapter is all about making first impressions. And Jared's response was, make sure that everyone is on the same page and the right page. So
I like that.
Yes. And I'm really taking an idea from one of your playbooks, Laura. He said that people can arrive at the learning experience from traffic, from family issues, from what they saw on TV, and all of those lingering associations impact how people receive and interpret the new information. So starting with a brain dump is a good idea.
Yes.
What you did and what I admired and acquired this week is just at the very beginning, give participants an opportunity to get all of that stuff out of their head so that they can focus on their learning. The first strategy we activate, is what he said, can influence how we tackle future tasks. And so if we get those pressing, worrisome issues out of the head, then we can focus on the learning. I think both of us start our sessions well, but having a first activity, really think about how that's going to influence the learning. If we're collaborating, let's do collaborating first. If we're going to debate, let's do something that's like comparing and contrasting or sharing opinions. That's the big takeaway and experience. And I think the session participants really enjoyed that brain dump time at the beginning.
Oh, I'm sure they did. And I love that. I love that it's going beyond priming thinking before even getting there, because that's kind of what I was thinking in our conversation last week, really just priming our audience for what's to come. But I really like taking it a step further in that application of priming when you walk through the door for the rest of the time together. That sounds fantastic. And yeah, I'm sure your participants got quite a lot out of you applying that thinking during your session this week. So good stuff.
Thanks. Thanks.
Okay, so before I share what's been inspiring me, Catherine, what about you? Do you have another quick win or an inspiration for learning that you want to share with us?
Yes, and this one is also something that you are aware of, so it's not new to you, but we were both participating in an online course for learning experience design. And something that these instructors did that I loved so much is they created a little secrets behind the course series of videos. This was all online. So at the end of module one, they had a little link and it was optional, but you could click and then watch a series of videos. What were the intentions behind each of these decisions and each of these activities? I think for professional learning developers who are often doing trainers of training kinds of sessions, having this little optional secrets piece, and using that word secrets, I thought was so cute. And it adds a little curiosity to the learning experience. But what I did, and let me connect everything, is in a pre-email, I created a secrets of the pre-email, and I primed the participants with all these kinds of behind the scenes look. And I also said, you're going to get more of these videos throughout the day. If you want to look at them, you can. It's completely up to you. But I think if teachers are thinking about their classes and the students who are early finishers, they could create like a little secrets behind this other math concept. And just for extending the learning, but maybe lessening the cognitive load, like not all in the document or the lesson, but just a little if you want to see it. So that's my quick win.
Okay. I love this win also. And I think you gave me too much credit by saying I was also a participant. I think you participated way better than I did, but I also really love this idea. And you're right. That phrasing, just the secrets behind the design, was appealing for me to click on to learn more about how they created this online course. And I think it's so cool as just sort of like a built-in extension. You know, today we use so many tools and so many things and ideas that are inspired from various places. Having that for people who want to click later, explore more without maybe detracting from your purpose and intended concept that you're covering in your session. So we don't stop everything and say, hey, by the way, this is Pear Deck. Let me show you how Pear Deck works. But having that opportunity for people who want to know more, such a cool idea and such a quick win. And I love that you quickly really did take it as a win and were inspired and put it immediately into an upcoming session. So good share.
Thanks. Thanks. All right, Laura, let's get to it. So tell us, what is inspiring you to learn this week?
This week, I'm inspired to learn by the concept of being a minimalist teacher. And since we've been sharing the multi-layered steps of inspiration that have led us to our topics that we've covered the past few weeks, here's my sort of lengthy trajectory of inspiration. So The Minimalist Teacher is a book, and I read a blog post from the authors back in August that tackles some of the back to school kind of wildness through the lens of minimalism. And then recently I was able to hear the authors speak at a virtual ASCD symposium, and they shared some of the highlights and thinking that they entailed in the book. So finally, here I am now, inspired by and newly reading the book, The Minimalist Teacher by Tamara Musioski-Borneman and C.Y. Arnold. And I know that that was not a very minimalist explanation of my discovery and learning, but hey, maybe that's why I need to read it.
Okay, so a blog post turned conference presentation turned book, all in 60 seconds or less.
I got it.
All right, give us the gist. Tell us about The Minimalist Teacher.
Okay, sure. And since I have truly just started reading it, what I think I'm going to do is, in my 60 seconds or less, talk about the highlights from their August blog post, How to Be a Minimalist Teacher, and then maybe add some additional tidbits from what I've read so far in the book later. Does that sound good?
That's fair.
Okay, perfect. Timer activated.
Okay.
Let's go. To start, minimalism is all about decluttering the extra from our day-to-day lives in order to feel more at ease, balanced, and productive. And as the authors point out, teaching is not a minimalist profession, but instead they call it a maximist profession. And their idea of applying minimalism in teaching is just simplifying teaching and learning to keep students in our direct line of vision. So they've broken it down into three areas of focus to achieve that goal of simplifying. And those are prioritizing one exciting item, decluttering your to-do list, and setting up a tidy workspace. And I'll talk more about each of these in a moment, but they also say this. I'll leave with a quote. Simplifying allows education to become richer and more meaningful by paring down distractions and all the waste that we are faced with daily. So they really just encourage teachers to achieve more with less. So that's my 60 seconds. Are you as intrigued as I am?
I think I was sold from the very first sentence where you talked about in order to feel more at ease, balanced, and productive. So that is super exciting. So why else is this inspiring you to learn?
First of all, just the idea of minimalism and teaching feels counterintuitive. Right? Especially in 2021, when educators are being asked to do so much more now than ever, and in new and in different and in changing ways, the idea of simplifying for ease and that balance and productivity sounds like the opposite of reality, but it also sounds like a breath of fresh air. And so the way they've broken it down, it actually sounds doable and helpful for our current reality by making just a few specific and manageable shifts in our thinking and practice.
Okay, I want to hear more. Let's dig into those three focus areas. So starting with the first one, prioritize one exciting item. What else does that mean?
So prioritizing one exciting item is the idea that you should find one thing on your to-do list and make that be your focus. So they recommend choosing something that sticks out to you and could get you excited about tasks ahead. And so I think I sometimes try to leave the thing that I enjoy most to the end of my to-do list and kind of slog through the other tasks that I don't really love as much. But they recommend instead focusing on that one task or one area at a time so you can feel better about subsequent tasks to come and really solidify all of your other tasks as well. So for example, at the beginning of the school year, maybe choosing to decorate your classroom because it brings you joy and it makes you feel calm when you're in this space that's already done, not working on other things, but really focusing on like, okay, this is my priority. I'm going to get my classroom done before really delving into one of the other many tasks that teachers are faced with at the beginning of the year. Or maybe another idea could be you're looking for resources to support some reflection activities in your classroom. So really keeping that narrow focus as you search through Twitter or Pinterest or a teacher's guide or whoever you're searching. And the trouble or the kicker for me, that is a struggle, not getting sidetracked by other things that you want to flag and come back to later, but really honing that focus and prioritizing that one item to get it done.
Okay. So this is a good reminder for me. And I've seen a lot of tools recently and apps that have you put that priority number one in one giant space and start each day with, you know, if you get this one thing done, then you're going to be satisfied. And then that will help you get through the others. I like the way that they say exciting item. I mean, that piece is bringing you joy or something that will lend itself to other items.
For sure. And you mentioning the kind of like visualizing that top priority, that really leads into their second point, which is declutter your to-do list. And this is a small tweak, but can be huge in the long run. And so really it's just making these tweaks to visually help you focus on your prioritized tasks. So the organizing and the formatting, if it's digital or analog, either way, in a way that is helpful and kind of just clears and streamlines things for you. The article mentions chunking your main priorities and then listing smaller or related tasks someplace else or in a color-coded way to keep those priority tasks large and at the forefront of your mind and of your list. So if you're organizing, you know, back to that example, organizing your room, that's the main task for your to-do list. All of those smaller related pieces that go into setting up your classroom can look different or be in a different place to help your list not look so cluttered or like it has 1 million things on it, which is helpful for staying focused on your main priority and keeping that headspace more clear as well.
Do they have recommendations for any, because I'm thinking back to the digital world, do they have any tool recommendations or have you seen anything yourself, Laura, that helps with that decluttered to-do list?
Good question. In the webinar that I attended, they had a couple of templates that were just going with the minimalist theme, really just streamlined to help you focus on finding that priority. They call it a priority matrix. And so it is four squares and you have to rank your tasks on this matrix of important and not so important. And then we've got urgent and not so urgent. Mm-hmm. And so getting you to figure out all these tasks that you need to do to figure out which is a high priority that needs to be taken or have action taken immediately down to, okay, if it's neither important or urgent, eliminate it as a priority. So that's just a pretty simple piece. I know that there's lots of tools out there, but they haven't given a recommendation so far in the book.
Okay. I'll keep searching for this magic tool for my to-do list. And
well, and they do really talk about, you know, maybe there isn't a magic tool and everyone is different. And so sometimes when you think about this idea of minimalist, you might think of this, you know, just bare bones, white, like clean, streamlined, maybe sterile room, or just this very clean app. And they've said, you know, everyone is their own person and has their own style. But regardless of what you're using, if you can make it look less cluttered and think about how you're ranking those priorities. And the part about listing the related pieces in another place or color coded or a smaller font or handwriting is something that I think would work across mediums. Mm-hmm. And so I like that as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So what about the third area of focus?
All right. So the last area of focus tackled in the article is set up tidy workspace. And this is one actually that I've really thought about. In the article, they remind us to be intentional about the physical things that surround you and also consider how you feel when you're in your space. And so when I attended their webinar recently, they had an image of a classroom that was pretty cluttered. There were a lot of workbooks, extra supplies. There were some like heaps and piles of things. And the teacher's desk was just covered in stuff and things, both personal knickknack type of things, as well as supplies and papers and things like that. And so they asked everyone on the webinar to rate that image on a scale of 1 to 10, to rate how relatable that image was. Mm. And then they asked us to rate it again on the same scale of 1 to 10, our related stress level. And so most of us, myself included, rated both scales pretty high. Like it was a pretty relatable image, but also pretty stress inducing as well. And so they do mention, this is really a classroom kind of vibe. They mentioned that sometimes that scarcity mindset creeps in. Like what will happen if I don't have 800 index cards or 500 post-it notes within reach at all times? But they remind us that, you know, storage closets do exist, or storing things in places within your classroom that are not out in the open is usually available to us. And for us to really take inventory of the items that we actually use through the course of the day, and then just streamlining that workspace from there.
Just your description, the heaps and piles of things, I could feel my shoulders going up thinking mm-hmm. about, yes, my desk has looked like that in the past world. But I think especially this year, I do really feel so much better when I have those clean spaces. So I can see how this is an important area of focus.
For sure. And so to add to that, I'll pull out a quote from the article. So they've quoted Darby Saxby, a psychology professor at the University of Southern California. And so they've got this quote that says, a cluttered workspace can negatively impact mental well-being, particularly among women. Ooh. And of course, they point out that's pretty problematic because so many public educators are female. So something to think about, just your mental well-being and clarity.
Mm-hmm. Well, interestingly, I'm reading a book called The Cozy Minimalist. It's like a house Ooh. Home book. And a quote that just came up was to give yourself the gift of less. And so I feel like, yeah, this is a true gift. And I can see that it could improve my well-being when I have less stuff, but cozy and warm feeling too. Like you mm-hmm. still want that classroom to have a certain vibe, but you don't need those 800 index cards.
For sure. Well, and just thinking about, you know, the wildness that is being alive in 2021 and all of the stuff and all of the things and all of the feelings and initiatives and things that we all face in classrooms. Just if you can have this idea of minimalism, reflected in your physical space, in your mind. They keep circling back to the mental clarity of being able to tackle tasks one at a time. Stay focused on a priority task. Make sure that your space is tidy. That's helpful for you so that you can be present and have that clearer brain with your students, but your students will also pick up on that, or you can have that be, you know, part of your classroom. I'll use that word vibe, or we're a pretty minimalist classroom, and then it can be really helpful to share with students as well.
Oh, that sounds great. Mm-hmm. I think in my presentation world, and because of the pandemic, one thing that I have eliminated from my work is the number of tools that I use, because I used to be like, let me show you 10 different tools in a session. That's a lot in the remote world, and it lessened the cognitive load. If we just use Padlet or Jamboard, people already were familiar with that. They knew how to navigate that. So I really become a minimalist, I think, with my tech tools this year, and it's felt really good.
That's that doing more with less attitude that they talk about. That makes me think, they don't explicitly mention this in the article, and I haven't come across it yet in the book, but when I attended their webinar, you know, their slides were super minimal and clean. And we've talked about that kind of shift as well, going away from, okay, y'all, here are 50 tools in 50 minutes and 50 words on one slide, but really just streamlining and making sure the tools are a limited number, and just the cognitive load of people who are seeing those slides, they're able to decipher it and aren't having to sift through a lot of cluttered things on slides. And so I think that design piece in a minimalist way is something that I've been thinking about a lot, particularly, of course, thinking about remote life.
And then that relates back to the book that I discussed last week with the Stop Talking, Start Influencing, with the less stuff on the slides. Okay, now I know you haven't read the whole book, but is there anything else from the book that you've read so far that you would like to share?
Really, the book, just as books do, breaks all of these things down into greater detail. And again, I think just makes an idea that is kind of wild, or again, like I said earlier, feels maybe counterintuitive when you're like, classroom minimalist, really does make it seem approachable and accessible, and something that you could make a couple of tweaks and shifts to have manifest in your classroom. And so I really like that. And I will give you the chapter titles where they've broken them down into specifics. So they've got a chapter on decluttering the physical environment. So that kind of ties back to that tidy workspace. There's a chapter on decluttering initiatives, decluttering the curriculum, and then finally decluttering instructional and assessment strategies. Ooh. So exciting things to come as I continue reading this. And I love that they've been able to break it down and give those chapter focuses.
I think this year is the year that teachers need this kind of book. They need to declutter all of the above and those chapters that you just listed.
For sure.
All right. Did we get everything that you wanted to chat about, or are there any other ideas that you'd like to share?
Okay, so in the idea of being minimalistic, I think I'm going to leave it at that. I think I had my points. I think we talked about them, and I'm not going to go any further, but I will be excited to share, once I read more of the book, other things that I'm taking away. So I'm going to leave it there.
Okay, that sounds fantastic. Well, then we'll move right along in theme. So as you know, we'd like to use the end of our episodes as a place to launch further thinking. We want to challenge each other to apply what we share. So Laura, where do you go from here? How might you incorporate ideas from the minimalist teacher into your work or further your learning?
Honestly, I've already used some of the thinking from this article and book and webinar that I got to participate in to really evaluate what my workspace looks like and see how I can declutter and really just store things in a better way for a cleaner, more minimalistic desk and subsequently headspace. So I've cleaned things out. So that is something that I went ahead and applied immediately. And then I also think I want to spend some time rethinking the way that my to-do lists are organized and see if I can locate those top priorities and then list the related tasks differently. I really liked that because currently my list is seemingly like a random post-it of 32 things that I thought of this morning. Also, here is a post-it to show you, you can see it. So instead of doing that, really being more intentional about where and how I am keeping these lists and how I organize them. So it's not just a bunch of random things, but I have that priority focus and really finding that one that excites me as well. And then, of course, just applying this thinking of decluttering and focusing on priorities and outcomes for the sessions that I design also. So not just prioritizing my own to-do list, but really prioritizing what we're doing in the sessions that I'm building. And also that piece of the way that my slides look, hopefully clean and minimalistic. And I know that we have said that phrase, less is best, quite a bit during pandemic teaching times. And so really remembering that and taking that idea to heart from here as well. And then of course, just continuing to read the book. So I've got a lot of takeaways today.
Okay. They all sound excellent. We'd also like to extend the invitation to you, dear listener, to share your ongoing story of learning as well. Take a moment to pause and think wherever you're listening from and consider, what ideas have you heard today that have sparked your interest and inspired further learning about the minimalist teacher?
Find us on Twitter at @DigLearnRadio to continue the conversation and share your own learning that's inspiring you this week.
This season, we're dedicated to sharing our learning and the things that are inspiring us. We hope that when we share, the conversation and ideas will cultivate curiosity and inspire you to explore one of the resources, reflect on a question we've asked, or continue the conversation with us online. Share your learning inspirations and ideas from this episode and beyond with the people in your circle, with us, or with a colleague down the hall. We are, as ever, inspired to learn from Gail Allen and her work in the new pillars of modern teaching. She reminds us that when we share, we add a sentence to the story we communicate about ourselves to the world. Let's continue learning, sharing, and transforming. Let's get inspired.